Welcome to another exciting THN Answer of the Week, where every week we discuss your answers to the question of the week. It just makes sense. But before we go on, I need to know what Joe Patrick was asking these nerds.
As a counterpoint to last week, this week's question was, what creative team changes have you been happy to see in the past?
Okay. We're going to be in a good mood.
Pretty fair. Pretty self-explanatory.
Every Friday, Joe Patrick puts the question of the week up on our Twitter and our Facebook. You guys are more than welcome to answer there. If you're going to use Twitter, please use the hashtag THNAOW. You were much better about it this week, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's because we gave you a tongue-lashing last week.
Gross.
Don't make us hurt you again. But we prefer it when you call us at our Ziggurat direct line. By the way, Ziggurat is where we record. It's this giant stepped pyramid in Omaha. If you ever come here, please come visit. The phone number is 402-819-4894. Call us. We'd love to hear your voice. If you're overseas, you can Skype us, but I warn you, Skype is a tricky mistress. Let me tell you, she's a hard one to hold. That's Skype. Joe Patrick, traditionally, we start with a tweeter. Would you like to start there, sir?
I would.
Let's do it.
Our first tweeter comes from Jerry T. I'm going to say welcome aboard, Jerry.
Yeah, welcome aboard, Jerry
T. Even though it looks kind of familiar.
And if even so, welcome aboard again. Whatever. Yeah.
He says, I've really been loving the new creative teams on Red Lanterns and Green Lantern New Guardians.
Hey. Is that a...
Charles Soule.
Soule, that's right.
And Green Lantern New Guardians is Justin Jordan and Brad Walker.
Okay. You know what? I haven't read the Charles Soule one, but I have been reading his Swamp Thing, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed New Guardians. Red Lanterns, I'm not a fan of it, but I do like Justin Jordan and Brad Walker on Green Lantern New Guardians. That's a solid answer.
I would like to return to Red Lanterns, but, you know, we'll figure it out.
I'm not a fan of the concept as, like, I don't want to read about it as the lead every month.
Sure.
I don't care that much. Josh Sapien. Welcome aboard, Josh. Yeah, excellent name.
Yeah, I feel like we would remember that one.
Says the Milligan and Allred X-Force immediately springs to mind. Of course, he's talking about when Peter Milligan and Mike Allred surprisingly, seemingly out of the blue, took over the existing X-Force title, which prior to that, it's X-Force. It's what you'd think.
Yeah.
It was a little different because they were going through that Counter-X, Warren Ellis kind of stuff.
Oh, right. That's when that happened.
But it wasn't as different as it became.
This is when we met the Orphan.
Yeah. And Mr. Sensitive.
Yeah.
the Anarchist. Dupe. That's where Dupe came from. And famously, X-Force 116 was Marvel's first comic that they published when they abandoned the Comics Code Authority.
Now, okay, they first appeared in X-Force and then it became X-Statics.
Yeah, it was relaunched as X-Statics, but they took over X-Force.
There was Anarchist, Bloke, Coach, Dead Girl, who I loved.
Dead Girl, she was so cute. Dead Girl.
Dupe, Spike Freeman, El Guapo.
Yeah, El Guapo. Yeah,
which means the handsome.
Yeah.
Mysterious Fanboy, Lacuna, Bat. Who was just a big fat person.
He could become skinny and fat. He
Saint
was
Anna, and fat. Spike, You Go Girl, Venus, D, Milo, and Vivisector.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Yep.
It was crazy, but it was fun. I liked it.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Thanks for writing in, Josh Sapien. Andrew Merzak, ever faithful, writes in saying, how about Joe Keating and Ross Campbell taking over Glory?
Totally.
Or Brandon Graham and Simon Roy on Profit.
Both.
Amazing, weird stuff.
Both. Two thumbs up for both.
Yeah, man. Gene Law.
Welcome.
Gene, I'm sorry. I can't keep track of who still needs to get welcomed aboard.
Let's welcome aboard, Gene.
Gene says, Mark Waid being given the reins of Daredevil in 2011 was the happiest I have been with Marvel since they offed the century.
Yeah, man. Okay, G-E-N-E or J-E-A-N?
G-E-N-E.
G-E-N-E.
Like
so
the gentleman. Yeah.
Gene, okay.
That's it for the tweeters.
That is it for the tweeters.
Moving over to Facebook, our first response comes from Stephen Fino. Welcome aboard, Stephen.
Right, these are all new names.
They seem like they
are. I love it.
Both he and our lawyer, Ryan Forrest, say...
Our consigliere.
Yeah. Jeff Lemire taking over Green Arrow from Ann Nesenti. A welcome change indeed.
Okay, to be fair, just about anybody could have stepped in there.
And we'd all be wiping our brow going, whoo, glad that's over with.
Close one. Aaron Myers, King of Askenerd, writes in with two recent ones that came to mind. Jason Aaron on Thor.
Excellent choice.
Jonathan Hickman on Avengers and New Avengers.
Both excellent choices.
Both writers are two of my favorites, and what they have done with those titles couldn't be better. That's in my opinion, of course. Your feelings may be different, and if they are, they are wrong.
I couldn't agree more. You don't like his Thor? You're wrong. Or maybe you just don't like Thor, period. I don't know. Or maybe you're a jerk.
Stephen Kohler writes in with a couple of classics. He says, when Frank Miller took over Daredevil, he made that character relevant. And Dan Slott and Humberto Ramos on Spider-Man is a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
But he gets philosophical for a second.
Whoa.
And for one that never happened, Gail Simone's replacement on Batgirl. I have found her entire run on Batgirl pretty boring, and I was looking forward to a new face, but alas, 'twas not to be. I wonder how many of the people who made a big stink about Simone being replaced actually bought Batgirl. Good question. John Boucher, who apparently did not have the stones to call in yet again.
Come on, Boucher.
This one's pretty understated.
That's how he spells it, right? B-O-U-C-H-E-R?
Yeah.
Boucher.
This one's pretty understated, and you never really hear it talked about, but I have been very pleased with John Layman taking over on Detective Comics.
It's been really good.
I enjoyed this change on two fronts. The first being that under writer Tony S. Daniel, the title was waist deep in 90s grimdark teeth-clenching grittiness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In my mind, what little I read of his run is characterized by two moments. Joker cutting off his own face and a panel of Batman looking at a bathtub full of blood and saying, looks like someone was taking a bath. A bloodbath.
Oh, God. Wow.
And any new writer that came along could only improve things. The second reason I enjoyed this change was that it allowed me to see another side of John Layman, who I only knew from his wonderful work on Chew. I half expected the same kind of cartoonish wackiness when he started writing Detective, but he used a completely different tone to tell some serious Batman stories with excellent mysteries and some pretty clever moments of insight into the character. One that sticks out in my mind is Batman beating up thugs and narrating about how Bruce Wayne donates lots of money to Gotham hospitals, since he's the reason they're always so overwhelmed.
Hey-o.
It's always good to find out that a talented funny man is just as talented when he's not cracking jokes. Also, I'll give honorable mention to Greg Pak's upcoming Action Comics, just because anyone taking a title out of Loeb Dell's inexplicably pervasive tendrils is something to celebrate, in my opinion.
I think he works for the right price. I think that's the that's the key.
And then John sent a picture of that panel with Batman. Looks like someone was taking a bath. A bloodbath. And it, like, reading it now after he writes that, after he wrote that post, Tony Daniel.
There you go. Let's make that
constantly bringing us joy.
Let's make that the image that goes along with the episode.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'd like to propose a nickname for Boucher.
Okay.
The Booch. From here on out, he is John Boucher is the Booch.
Johnny the Booch.
Or just Johnny Booch or Booch, whatever.
Oh, Johnny Booch. I like that. I like the Booch also. The Triple B. Men know him as Buzzy Brown Brennan.
It's true.
Says, everything Jeff Lemire has taken over in the DCU and Jason Aaron in the Marvel U. I could dig deeper in the past, but I'm lazy. And they were the first to come to mind.
Counts.
People love Jason Aaron and Jeff Lemire.
They've been great.
Harvey Locust says that he is not sure he wants to try again after his drunken fail last week.
Oh, boy.
People gave him a lot of encouragement, but...
Harv, I loved it.
Come on, man.
I thought it was great.
It was great. David Guffey, who wrote in last week... says, just take mine from last week and reverse it. Whoever John Byrne took over Fantastic Four from, that was his, you know, most joyful creator change moment.
Man, I don't have the slightest clue.
I don't remember who was doing it before John Byrne, like in the immediate. I know George Perez had a run, but that may have been even earlier than, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to do some digging.
Yeah. But he goes on to say, when Alan Moore took over Swamp Thing from Martin Pasco, that is a pretty good one and a turning point for DC Comics. That's where Vertigo came from. In addition to Moore's ride, the artwork by Stephen Bissett and John Totleben was perfect for capturing Moore's stories. Their artwork would go from simple to almost photorealistic in some panels, especially splash pages and larger page-sized interior artwork. David wraps it up by saying, "My collecting days were in the 80s and have not regularly collected since, so I may be out of the loop on some of the newer creators, but there's not much out there that comes close to that run of Swamp Thing with Moore, Totleben, and Bissett."
Right on.
Hard to disagree.
Right on.
Brian Domingos has a whole bunch of them. He touches on X-Force, which we already dealt with. He agrees that it was amazing and highly recommends the X-Statics Omnibus. He says, "I'm going to go off the premise that the creators coming on were relative unknowns for this. That's not really the premise, so that's okay. Fraction and Aja on Hawkeye, of course. Wonderful." He moves on. "Warren Ellis and Tom Rainey on Stormwatch."
Yeah, man.
"I knew Ellis from a little bit of Marvel stuff and minor Wildstorm books, but this was eye-opening."
Jerk just took my answer.
"I'd seen a short Rainey arc on Uncanny X-Men, and it was nothing special. With a single issue, Ellis completely retooled the concept and delivered a nasty murder mystery. Rainey gave the book a cool new look." Jeff Johns and Scott Collins on The Flash. "Mark Waid's Flash is what got me into DC Comics in the first place, so I always had an affinity for Wally. Period. Johns and Collins gave the book a fresh new feel and did the, quote-unquote, definitive Wally and Linda and the Rogues. The book survived a new direction and a new artist in Howard Porter, but Collins has never looked so good and still can't match it." I agree with that.
Totally agree.
And he says, "Charles Soule, Kano, and Jesus Saez on Swamp Thing. The Scott Snyder book had so much potential, but it's really just one long, lifeless crossover story. I read a little bit of Soule's indie stuff, but I was not expecting to like the book so much. Kano and Saez have been around for years and are both great, but this book is something special. It's like the Alan Moore stuff, but renewed to modern sensibilities." That is probably the strongest recommendation I've ever read for the Charles Soule Swamp Thing. Not that people are hating it, but like nobody it. Seems to be going crazy over it.
I like it, but I'm not gonna go that far yet. I'm
happy to see Brian singing its praises.
Cool, definitely.
Our last Facebook response comes from Gregory Litchfield, who says, "First off, thanks for naming me the official two-headed nerd answer of the week old timer.
We needed one.
On the answer of the week last week."
Yeah, we needed
week,
one.
Week, week. "If you were to make my title more in keeping with the comics genre, I think the ancient one may be more apropos."
Whoa.
The THN ancient one.
It's kind of fun, too.
"But it's your show, so you can call me whatever you like, within reason."
We're sticking with the old timer.
"And we're all reasonable people here, right? Right?
Sure.
Yeah, of course we are, Gregory.
Of course we are.
My immediate response to my favorite creative writer-artist change would have been, because I was such a Spider-Man fanboy, when John Romita took over as artist from Steve Ditko with issue number 39 of Amazing Spider-Man. That's cheating in a way because I didn't read the classic Ditko or Romita runs when they were originally published. Despite my preferred nom de plume, I was only 5 years old when Amazing Fantasy 15 was published, and I didn't buy my first Amazing Spider-Man until issue 100 in 1971 at age 13. I did read the reprints of many of Romita's stories later in Marvel Tales, but wouldn't be exposed to Ditko's work until I began buying reading copies of The Amazing Spider-Man a few years later. Despite my appreciation for Ditko's contributions, I always preferred the look of Romita's art." I think that's fair.
Right on.
I mean, it's weird because both John Romita and Steve Ditko are considered definitive Spider-Man artists.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I can see a case for both as, like...
Absolutely.
Anyone, like, the image you get when you close your eyes of Spider-Man, I can see a case made for both.
Sure, definitely.
"One of my favorite Marvel characters has always been Doctor Strange. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not a fan of Steve Ditko's artwork and therefore didn't care for his run on the character with Stan Lee writing in Strange Tales. I also missed out on the classic run of Doctor Strange and Strange Tales written by Roy Thomas with art by Gene Colan and Tom Palmer. My first new issue exposure to Doctor Strange was in Marvel Premiere number 3, which was written by Stan the Man Lee himself, penciled by Barry Windsor-Smith and inked by Dan Adkins.
I remember.
Early Smith artwork isn't bad, but even with Frank Brunner inking his pencils in issue number 4, it wasn't great. I am ashamed by the depth of Gregory's knowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
He's really good at this.
I am going to paraphrase Gregory's response just a little bit for time. He goes on to say that Marvel Premiere Issue 9 features Doctor Strange by the writing team of, or by the team of writer Steve Englehart, penciler Frank Brunner, and the masterful inking of Ernie Chua. I don't know how you say that.
How do you spell
C-H-U-A.
It? C-H-U-A.
Chua.
Chua. Chua.
Englehart and Brunner continued on the title until Issue 14, when Doctor Strange, when it relaunched with an actual Doctor Strange number one a few months later. Englehart's scripts brought Strange into the modern Marvel Universe and strengthened the previously underdeveloped characters of Wong and Clea. Frank Brunner's art, inked by Dick Giordano, was wonderfully detailed yet still dynamic. However, Brunner inked his own pencils on the covers of Doctor Strange 1 through 5, and they are masterful in their use of line work to create a true three-dimensional look. Unfortunately, Brunner left with Issue 5 and was replaced by Gene Colan with Issue 6. And while I loved Colan's unique artwork and grew to admire his run on Doctor Strange as well, I credit the team of Englehart and Brunner for making me a fan of the master of the mystic arts for life.
Right on. I thought he was going to say that he did not like Gene Colan's Doctor Strange. I was like, don't ever write us again, okay? You got to be kidding me.
Hey, listen, I understand. Greg, we love your responses. And honestly, the depth of the knowledge that you have for this stuff is really impressive.
Very impressive.
And
especially for your age. I mean, it's hard to remember all this
stuff.
You'd
think that you'd be losing some of that. Like, you might remember reading them, but
it was so long ago.
I was 13 or maybe 30. I don't remember.
Yeah, great answer. Really good answer. Thank you, sir.
That's all we have for the Facebook. Do we have any voicemails this week, Matt Bomb?
We have got a whopping 2 calls.
Ugh!
The lowest we've ever had. Shameful. Seriously, guys, you got to do better. Our first call, Shaunix came into town and hung out with us this weekend. He promptly went home and then called us. What a guy. What a guy. He could have done it in person, but he still called. Let's see what he had to say.
Hey, nerds. It's Shaunix calling in with my answer to the question of the week. Sorry I missed last week. I totally was a maroon. I'm a good at. And Chuck Dixon, man, seriously. I, like, came in late on that, on Nightwing. Fully late, but loving it. Probably got a year in before he was done, but I went back and got, like, all the back issues. And then he was gone, and, yeah, that was heartbreaking. Wow. Oh, and secondly, nice seeing you guys this week. This past weekend was fantastic. Matt, you know, always a pleasure. Woo the toots! Jared's good. It's awesome. Got to meet Cam. Really good time. Answer.
Come on, Sean, get it together.
Wildcats 3.0, Joe Casey, Dustin Nguyen, for the win. Later, guys.
Good answer.
That's a good answer.
Real solid answer.
Though Wildcats 2.0 was by Joe Casey and Sean Phillips, also good.
Yeah. Also really good. Yeah. I think you could stretch that to Warren Ellis's Wildcats, too. Or, pardon me, not Warren Ellis. Alan Moore's Wildcats. Oh, what he did on that book. Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, but that was years earlier.
So good.
It was years earlier.
I'm just talking about other Wildstorm stuff. And it looks like Wooly Toots...
You're so adorable. You and your Wildstorm.
I love it. It looks like Wooly Toots followed him right up.
Hey, podcast bros. It's Wooly Toots with the answer of the week. I know I've been absent as of late, but I feel like everyone had a real good dose of the toots and needed to calm down after overdosing. But here is my answer. When Timothy Truman and Tomas Giorello took over the Conan book, initially I was concerned. Not so much with Tomas because I recognized his work from Wizards of the Coast. He did a lot of stuff for D&D. But Timothy Truman, I was a little shaky on. That guy wrote probably one of my least favorite Dark Horse Conan stories. Songs of the Dead, I think it was. It's horrible. Anyways, they quickly turned it around for me. They did great. I was really upset when Busiek and Nord were leaving the book because they were incredible, and I thought no one could top them. Timothy and Tomas have matched them beat for beat. These guys are doing a great job. And I couldn't be more pleased that they're still doing work. The King Conan stuff they're doing is phenomenal. The adaptations of the stories are excellent, and Tomas kills it with his pencil work. Every issue has at least one full-page panel that is just incredible, and at least a two-page spread that is amazeballs. So I don't care how long it takes for these guys to do their Conan work, their King Conan work. They can deliver one series a year. They could do one every other year. I don't care. They can take their time if they keep putting out this kick-ass work that is just, oh, by Crom. Good shit. All right, bros. I'll see you both around town. Later, fellas.
Willie Toots, always guaranteed to smash a Conan answer into the answer of the week.
A bad case of the toots.
Oh, that's going to make it on the very end. That does it for our two calls. Joe Patrick, why don't we talk about ours? Do you want to start with your favorite creative team that was a pleasant surprise that jumped on?
Sure, why not? I have two answers. One is a creative team and one is just an artist.
Okay. I'm glad because I have one that's just a writer.
So. Okay. My and I'm sticking to ones that happened like while I was actively a fan of, right, you know, Book X. Or not necessarily a fan of that book, but aware of it, collecting at the time, right?
Gotcha.
So the early 90s are famous for their terribleness.
Oh yeah, they were bad.
It's a dark time.
Everybody had chains and long hair.
With rare exception. The mid-90s and beyond are actually one of my favorite periods in mainstream superhero comics.
I don't think they get enough pull.
They get lumped in with all of the 90s.
Like, oh, the 90s were terrible. That is false.
And it's not that there wasn't still bad stuff.
Sure.
It's that the companies kind of turned it around and started doing great stuff.
Right. And there's always been bad stuff. Yeah. Don't kid yourself.
Right. So, at the time, the Justice League franchise was in a bad way.
Just turmoil, even.
Like, in the 80s, they launched Justice League as like the kind of comedy book by Kevin Maguire and Keith Giffen and those guys.
Yes.
And that was great.
It was totally great.
And but you fast forward 10 years later, or 8 or 9 years later, and what's evolved from that is not ideal.
They lost like, their way.
They lost their way, and they tried to bring it back to like a more serious direction, yeah, and it took for a while. But when we hit like 1995, 1996, we had the Justice League of America, written and drawn by two people I could not identify if you paid me.
Yeah.
And it had just a ridiculous roster of nobodies. And then somebody had the genius idea to let some bald weirdo relaunch the book. JLA number one, Grant Morrison, Howard Porter. I bought it off the rack. I was in college. I saw the ads leading up to it. And I was like, oh, yes.
Same here. And I hadn't read JLA in years when, yeah, I picked it up. I was like, I don't care, but I mean, the art looks kind of cool.
I had been like going back and like reading it in back issue, and it's not good. It's not good. But then, when they pulled that trigger and, yeah, relaunched Justice League,
yeah,
brought it back to basics, it became my favorite DC read at that time.
That would be my
like the
DC
first book I had to read every time it came out.
Yeah, it was excellent.
And when it was late, I knew it. And this was like before the internet was all over the place, and like the internet was around. I'm not that old, but you know, it wasn't like I was checking the Diamond website or Marvel.com. No, this was like you were lucky if you could go to Marvel.com and see, right, a really shitty digital comic.
Right. We had the Comic Shop News.
Yeah, Comic
That's
Shop.
What we had.
Comic Shop News and Wizard Magazine. Right.
You would read it, and then you'd line your reptile cages with it or whatever.
Exactly. And so when that book was late,
a Wizard told Wizard us Magazine, all this stuff. Yeah.
When JLA was late, I felt it like in my soul. It was like JLA is late. And so that was my number one team shift that made me the happiest as a collector and fan. Second, also a DC book. I was a little apprehensive when I found out that Tony Harris was leaving Starman.
Yeah.
But the guy that replaced him, Peter Snedberg.
Snedberg. I think it's pronounced Snedberg.
Snedberg. is such a wonderful fit.
He was
like,
really
he
good.
Made that book his own. And now, if I'm being really honest with myself, I think that when I think back on Starman, I think of his art and his characters maybe more so even than I do of Tony Harris.
Okay.
So for a book to be, for an artist, you know, to come onto a book after an already popular run and make it his own and make it equally good and popular, I think is an amazing feat. And so I was really happy with that shift in retrospect.
Right on.
Lay it on me.
You kind of stole my DC answer, which would have been Morrison and Porter JLA. So I'm just going to name a couple Marvel ones that I really liked. At the time, this would have been way back. This would have been when? 1995-ish, I guess, around there. I had always liked Doctor Strange just from his appearances here and there, and I had some old Doctor Strange issues, but I didn't really care so much about the Doctor Strange series that was going on. I picked it up when Mark Buckingham started drawing it because I just thought Mark Buckingham's art was incredible. The story was not so great. A guy named David Quinn was writing it, but then on issue 80, the story called Earthquake Logic, a guy I'd never heard of before, another dirty British guy, Warren Ellis, started writing. He wrote it for 3 issues. 3 issues he gave me. And then I think John Ostrander took it over, and it was still great. Yeah. I really liked the whole rest of that series. But Warren Ellis's Doctor Strange were so creepy and good and amazing looking because of the fantastic art that Ellis was made to tell stories of Mark Buckingham. Magic stories, anyway. And God, I loved him so much. The first thing he did was put him in this ridiculous new outfit because he had to become a different sorcerer because he was cursed. There was something else that was going on. I didn't remember. It was huge, but I loved it. Second answer. And this was the first thing I thought of when you came up this question. Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting on Captain America. Hands down. Hands down.
Yeah.
Before them, Captain America was also in a very similar flailing spot.
Yeah, it was weird because it was post 9/11.
Yeah.
Like almost immediately post 9/11.
They didn't know what to do with the character.
And Captain America was doing a lot of like real world fighting terror.
But it just didn't work. And and they didn't want to make him this like Arab smasher. Like,
no, it wasn't like that.
They tried played him off well, but they kept relaunching it and relaunching it and relaunching
they
it.
They really did.
And I think the final one before Epting and Brubaker, I want to say it was Paul Jenkins.
I don't remember. I honestly lost complete track I wasn't reading them.
I think it was Paul Jenkins.
I know
Jenkins.
Chris Bocciolo drew some.
96, 98, 99, 2002, 2005. Like, that is a lot of relaunches.
Well, 96 is Heroes Reborn.
Right.
98 is Heroes Return.
Okay.
So what's the one right after that? There would have been 2 relaunches. There would have been the one where it was relaunched and John Cassidy did the art.
There was 99 and there was 2002. That's one you're thinking of. Yeah, John Reibner and John Cassidy relaunched it in 2002. And it kind of flailed through that series.
Didn't it relaunch again before 2005, or was that it?
No, that was it.
Okay.
It lasted 32 issues.
Chris Bocciolo drew some towards the end.
Robert Kirkman was writing it at the very end.
What?
Yeah. With Scott Eaton penciling. Yeah.
What?
Yes.
I forgot about that.
He wrote the final issue. And then in 2005, Brubaker and Epting launched what is, in my opinion, the most perfect run of Captain America out there. It is incredible. Start to finish, wonderful. Didn't falter for an issue for me. I loved it. And again, at that time, Ed Brubaker hadn't written a whole lot of superhero stuff. He had done some here and there.
Gotham Central, maybe?
Yeah, but still.
And some Batman.
Really,
definitely some Batman,
but definitely really street-level related stuff.
Yeah, this was crime, prior to his run on Daredevil.
Definitely. So it was a bunch of crime noir type stuff, and when they announced Captain America, I remember we all kind of looked at each other like, meh. And then we all read it and went, hey, that's not bad. And then, like, each issue, it got better and better.
Yeah.
And And then they brought Bucky back, and we were all pissed, and that turned out to be the coolest thing ever. And then they killed Captain America, and we were all pissed, and that turned out to be the coolest thing ever.
Well, I don't know if that was the coolest thing ever.
That story was awesome.
I mean, I did love Bucky as Captain
America.
Totally
awesome. And then we knew we were going to bring him back. We all went, ugh. But then it turned out they brought him back in a really cool way. No, it was fun as hell. I loved it. There was Dr. Doom and time travel.
Okay.
Man, it was fun. That's my answer. That's my definitive answer.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, that, man, that crew. I'm going to miss those guys on that book forever.
I would have expected, I would have expected you to say Walt Simonson taking over Thor, but were you reading Thor before that?
I was, but like I loved it before that, and then I loved it after it was still going. Like I was so young.
Yeah.
Like I don't even remember who was writing it before that, but I was buying it and I loved it. And a new guy took it over and I was just like, cool, new guy, whatever. Man, this art's weird. I hate it. No, I don't. I love it. You know, but like, this rekindled my love of Captain America.
That's a good answer, man.
Yeah. And I think the character has been different ever since and wouldn't be who he was today in the Avengers and stuff without these guys.
I agree.
Booyah.
Booyah.
Booyah. Thanks again for your answers, guys. You got to give us more calls. Two calls. That sucks. It just sucks. I'm not mad at you guys. I love you all.
I'm a little mad at you.
I'm a little mad at you. I'm disappointed. Like your father, I'm disappointed.
I just want you to make better choices. I want you to have what I couldn't have.
Get on the phone and call us. Like I said, Ziggurat Direct Line is 402-819-4894. Joe Patrick will be putting another question of the week up this Friday on our Facebook and our Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Two Headed Nerd. You can find us on Facebook at Two Headed Nerd. While you're there, click the like button. Okay? There. Done. We'll see you guys this weekend for another episode of the Two Headed Nerd proper.
Proper.
Proper. I feel like everyone had a real good dose of the toots.